welcome to the Nittany Blues Podcast. By Penn State fans, for Penn State fans. Here are your hosts, Andrew and Vince.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Nittany Blues Podcast. We are here to recap Penn State's 42-0 blowout over the Michigan State Spartans. Penn State officially finishes the regular season 10-2. It's the squad's second 10-win regular season in as many seasons. So pretty good season, all things considered. This was definitely an exciting game to watch as they work to wrap up their season and put themselves in the best position possible for a New Year's Six bowl game. We saw some offense. We saw some ferocious defense. We saw lots of good things. You know, kind of a shame that we're not going to see another game next week where we might be able to see them capitalize on this sort of performance. But nonetheless, it was exciting, an exciting way for the season to end for Penn State fans. So Vince, happy post-Thanksgiving to you, my friend. Hope you're doing well. What were some of your takeaways from the game?
Takeaways from the game. I think Drew Aller might be like the anti-Kirk Cousins. Like, he's polar opposite. You throw him in a big night game, he's lights out. He does a great job. However, when you put him on a noon game, just nothing seems to get going. And, you know, I think the same goes along for the Penn State offense. If you look at their noon kickoffs compared to the 3:30 and 7:30 kicks, it's statistically very surprising. But really, really loved the game, and he just kind of played within himself, made good decisions. The running game got going, which I was thrilled about. It was so nice to see Catron Allen averaging 9 yards per carry. Both him and Nick got over 100 rushing yards, which we have not seen throughout the course of the season. You also had Nick getting involved in the passing game. Theo Johnson was heavily involved, you know, along with others. So it was just a nice, balanced offensive attack. And Penn State racked up nearly 600 yards of offense. Just absolutely incredible performance. And then the fact that we had them at negative 35 rushing yards with some of those sacks, and then holding them to less than 100 passing yards for 53 total yards of offense. Man, that defense is elite. Like, if our offense could have just performed better, Ohio State and Michigan are looking like different stories.
You're right. I think that really sums up the feelings for a lot of Penn State fans. And I certainly had those same thoughts as well, because there were points, especially down towards the end of the game, where I kind of had that, where the hell has this been all season kind of feeling, because this really was what all Penn State fans were really asking for from the offense pretty much since, what was it, week 3 against Illinois, where we saw Drew and crew struggle to get anything going offensively against a relatively weaker team. But in this game, we saw cohesive offensive play calling. We saw a commitment to the run game. We saw Penn State look to give Drew Aller some easy completions, especially early in the game. We saw them get the ball out to their playmakers in space, let them do their thing. And you saw what the result was. You had both backs getting over 100 yards. Like you said, we saw explosive plays, more than one in a single quarter for the first time all season. So that was awesome. And Drew looked great. He was able to get into his groove early. He was making good reads. He was accurate at some of those passes. And I mean, he threw some darts down the line in that game as well. And I just got to say, because I mean, we got to shout out that long bomb. He looked exactly like Aaron Rodgers on that play action fake, you know, because you know how Aaron Rodgers just looks so smooth, like faking the handoff with his offhand that doesn't have the ball in it. Like, it looked exactly like that. And then when he reeled back, I'm like, oh man, he sees something. And it just, that was it, man. That was the offense. That was the kind of like playmaking ability that we've been just starving for with this offense all season long. And it's a real like cruel twist of irony that we had to wait until the very last game of the regular season to see this sort of thing. But you know, at the end of the day, like this is what Drew Aller is able to give you, like, as long as you're able to put him in a position to be successful, which I think they kind of took to heart what James Franklin said after the Michigan game, where he was preaching the message of every program, every team out there looks to get some easy completions for their quarterback. That's what every program does. And we hadn't seen it all season long, and we saw it against Michigan State, and you saw what happened because of it. So, you know, all in all, I mean, this was a refreshing difference as far as like the offensive attack is concerned, both for fans and for players as well. Like, did you see just the pure joy on Nick Singleton's face after he scored that touchdown from like 10 yards out? That was just a season's load worth of frustration just melting away.
It was. And I think I texted our group that I was like, I think this is the first time I've seen Nick smile like this entire year. And it was all smiles last year. And then this year's, you know, had some frustrating moments for sure. But yeah, nothing much to be too nitpicky about with the offense. They settled for field goals three times inside the red zone. So you like to, you know, see them keep the drive going and obviously get touchdowns. But when you're putting up 42 points and the defense only forces one turnover the entire game, that's a really great performance from the offense. So it was just finally good to see that. Now, again, you do have to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, granted, with the state of the Michigan State program and the fact that they're a 4-8 squad. They're a 4-8 squad for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't get too over and emotional with our excitement. Like, they probably will come back down to earth with whoever their bowl game opponent is. They're likely going to face another top 10 team. So it'll be fun. And I'm really excited to see where we stack up against other, you know, top 10, top 15 teams in the country, because really we haven't played any of them this year with the exception of Iowa. But I think Iowa is more up there because of a weak schedule as opposed to them actually being a really good football team. So I am looking really forward to seeing how we stack up against maybe one of these top teams in, you know, the Big 12 or the Pac-12, SEC, you name it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And, you know, what the nice thing is that the team has now about a month to really capitalize on this, keep working with interim coordinators, Sider and Howell, to kind of put this all together for a good bowl game performance. So I'm excited to see what that looks like as well, since they are going to have, you know, roughly a month worth of practice to kind of, you know, figure out some of these existing kinks if they found some during the Michigan State game. You know, what I will say, I mean, I agree with you. Like, it is only Michigan State. However, we saw what they were able to muster offensively against the likes of Illinois, Northwestern, and Indiana. So I'm just gonna take the small victories like where we can get them offensively, because there weren't many this season. But, you know, one thing that I think we also got a shout out here too is that, you know, in addition to this being the revival of the running backs, this was also in a way the revival of Theo Johnson as a receiving threat. That guy was on fire in this game.
Yeah, you saw him get tons of passes. Tyler Warren had a nice touchdown catch today. Like, it was just awesome. Like, everybody had a good day. Defense, everyone was crushing it. Like, it was just a good day to be a Penn State fan. Like, you just enjoyed your Thanksgiving turkey. Next day, you're probably sitting there enjoying your leftovers, maybe doing some Black Friday shopping earlier in the day, and you just go get to actually relax for a Penn State football game and just see them beat up on a lesser opponent. You know, we got out of East Lansing, so maybe that got rid of some of that voodoo magic they seem to have over there. And Ford Field, you know, I'm sure the players were really excited to be in an indoor environment away from all the harsh elements of the Midwest and the Northeast. So I think it was a refreshing change of scenery, being in a nice NFL stadium, no weather conditions to deal with, and just really getting a show out in front of a, you know, NFL teams and on a national stage Friday night. Like, it doesn't get better than that.
Yeah. Especially considering that there are some guys who grew up in the city of Detroit. You have the King twins, Theo Johnson, we were just talking about, grew up in Ontario. So, you know, this was closer to his home country than Beaver Stadium is. So I think that was a cool experience for him. Definitely balled out for that kind of opportunity. So that was neat. And I think you're right. Like getting away from the Black Magic of East Lansing and Michigan State definitely doesn't hurt either. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, like Penn State, especially on the defensive side of the football, just kind of proved their dominance. And I think Todd Blackledge on the call, which, by the way, Todd Blackledge is absolutely fantastic. Love every single one of his calls. And not even just saying that because he's a Penn State guy, but he's just really good. He kind of said it best where he said, you know, James Franklin is always talking about like getting them to the elite level. And offensively, they still have those steps to take. But this defense is already elite. Like if you just look at them top to bottom, like this is one of the best units in college football, and they proved it for four quarters. I mean, they were just smothering the quarterback and just shutting down any semblance of the run game for Michigan State. I think I texted our group late in the game where I was like, I've officially reached the point where I'm kind of starting to feel bad for the opposing quarterback because Penn State was just crushing them all game long. And I saw a comment on Twitter that they weren't exactly too happy with the fact that Penn State was still blitzing late in the game and stuff like that. And meanwhile, it's like the third stringers for Penn State. You don't have Adisa Isaac out there, you know, going out there to like sack the quarterback and stuff like that. You have like Tony Rojas and all the, you know, second and third string guys. Like this is not the, you know, the you know, first line defense and stuff like that. So it's kind of, you know, funny that Penn State is so good and so dominant defensively that like even with the backups in, it still looks like a starting defense.
Yeah, and I think that's a positive sign for the future as well, because we're going to be losing a lot of talent to graduation or the NFL. That's just, you know, plain cut and dry. That's going to happen. And Manny Diaz, I think he's going to get a head coaching job elsewhere. So the fact that we do have a lot of the talent still here, I think is a positive sign for the future. And I think that this performance and all is just kind of puts the energy back in the right level where it should be heading into bowl season. Like if you look at Rutgers, really took them a half to get it going. You had Indiana at home, or like struggled to get by them. Like they won like three games this season. It was just refreshing was just the perfect word for this Penn State offense. And I think, you know, it was nice to see the players have some joy and, you know, be carrying the Land Grant trophy back to Happy Valley for at least two more years.
Yep. Amen to that. What were your thoughts on the Bo Prabula package? We saw a bit more of that at different points during the game, especially down in the red zone. So what did you think of that?
I think it's a nice change of pace, and actually I don't think it's a terrible idea, especially since our receivers have been having a hard time creating separation. That only gets harder in the red zone. You have less space to work with. So I think it's a good idea if you're going to have to probably run anyway. Why not have your dual threat quarterback in there, you know, a little more elusive and quicker. And then, you know, you obviously have Nick and Catron in that wing T formation and get some tight ends in there and just, you know, be physical with them and, you know, get the ball in the end zone. So I thought it's a nice mix up. They're not overdoing it. They're not underdoing it. And then also that's going to keep Bo happy if he's getting some time in the games too, because, you know, transfer portal, it's a real thing. We have to keep an eye out for it. So I think it's a good thing that he's getting a handful of snaps. That way he's staying happy with where he's at.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even though he's a PA guy, you know, you can't exactly just always count on that in-state loyalty aspect of it. I'm with you inside the red zone, like go for it. I think it's a nice wrinkle. It makes the offense like harder to just defend overall. It just opens some things up in the playbook, really kind of leans into the strength of the Penn State offense a little bit with the rushing attack. I would say in between the 20s, if Drew is playing well, I would probably shy away from it a little bit on early downs, only because I think we saw a sequence in there where they went with that package and Drew split out wide and then play didn't work, got like 1 yard, and then Drew came in, threw an incompletion, and then it was like third and long. So if Drew is like playing well and he's dealing and he's finding, like, you know, whether it's, you know, tight end like on a quick route or something like that, I'm not necessarily in favor of kind of putting that in just for the sake of it. You know, granted, the coaches know more than I do, but that was just kind of like one takeaway that I saw from it. But in the, inside the red zone, I think it's money. So hopefully we'll continue to see some of that because, you know, against the likes of, you know, say Alabama in the Peach Bowl, like some people have projected us to be like, can't be settling for field goals in that scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, do you want to move on to players of the game and you think had a standout performance?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. So let me just pull this up here. Oh, one other little quick footnote that I wrote down because it was just like so astonishing that they mentioned at the end of the game. Apparently, Penn State held them to the third fewest yards in program history, like for a single game. So that's about as thorough of a butt kicking as you could possibly get. But nonetheless, so on the topic of players of the game, we've got our Bird Brawler Award to kick us off. And I'm going to go with Theo Johnson here. Theo has been a guy that we've kind of been waiting on and waiting on all season long to really emerge into that dominant tight end one that we all thought he could be at the tail end of last season. You know, coming off the spectacular season that Brenton Strange had, he would, you know, kind of been waiting through these games or just kind of like staying even keel, not doing anything spectacular, not doing anything like disastrous, just kind of being kind of average for what he's capable of. But in this game, he was the leading receiver for the team. He caught four passes for 59 yards and a touchdown. That was an absolute dime that Drew threw on that one. Just beautiful one right up the seam. Theo just played an excellent game and he was really involved in the rushing attack as well. They were talking about it on the broadcast, like bringing in the tight end to assist those tackles on some of those breakout runs and stuff like that. So thought he played awesome. And so he gets the Bird Brawler for this regular season finale.
Yeah, I think that's a really good candidate. For me, I'm looking in the direction of the Lawn Boys. And, you know, you could give either one of them one of these rewards, but I think I'm going to go, I think I'm going to go with Nick Singleton.
Okay.
Two receptions, 68 yards, 18 rushes for 118 yards. Katron also had a big day, averaging 9 yards per carry. Also received a passing touchdown. So if you're looking at looking, you know, both got a touchdown today, which is great. Really looking like themselves again. So they both had over 150 scrimmage yards. So that was just awesome performance from the Lawn Boys. They're back. Finally. So good to see. And I hope we see more of that in the bowl game.
Sweet. Yeah, I thought Nick played a great game. I was just so thrilled to see them finally get the ball to him in space because we all know just how explosive he could be. I made a joke that apparently the thing that Penn State needed to do to make the wide receiver screen finally work this season was to replace the wide receiver with a running back. And so just thought that was in good fun.
Yeah, I thought the play on the goal line was the third and goal that they got Katron the ball. Like I was like, oh no, we're going to settle for a field goal again. And then Katron had a nice run in the flat and Drew just led him perfectly. And it was a touchdown. So that really, at that point, put the game away. So I thought there was some good play calling today.
Yeah, I thought so too. Like I said, I mean, we saw commitment to the run. We saw like cohesive purpose to what they were trying to do offensively. I mean, you saw it even just early on with some of the routes that they were calling for Drew to throw the ball into. I mean, that first one to Dante, he just ran a quick route, just sat right there in the zone and just waited for the ball to come to him. Like it's that simple sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. This was a great performance overall. I was just so happy to be watching this and being stress-free. Like everyone had a good day. It wasn't much to nitpick in this game. This is the type of football that you expect to see Penn State play against an inferior opponent. And yes, they took care of business today. So it was great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the type of scoreline that you think a top 12, top 10 team should have against a team like Michigan State.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other games you saw that you were excited by this weekend?
Dude, I mean, did we ever? Yeah, so just a quick like little disclaimer. We're recording this on Saturday night, so we're going to, you know, kind of skim through some of the crazy games that have happened today through rivalry week. So let's just start with, you know, the game in the Big Ten, Michigan and Ohio State. You know, Michigan came out on top in that one. Game ended with a Kyle McCord interception. And You know, it's really weird to see the quarterback for Ohio State really be the reason why they lost. You know, I think that there were some moments in that where Ryan Day probably could have been a little more aggressive, like with his decision making. So I thought that kind of tipped the scales in Michigan's favor a little bit. But it was, yeah, Kyle just not making certain throws that we're used to seeing some Ohio State quarterbacks in the past make. And also just throwing that, you know, that essentially game sealing interception at the end. So crazy game. Michigan, you know, is gonna probably just cakewalk their way to another Big Ten title. They get the sacrificial lamb of Iowa in Indianapolis next weekend. Yeah, because they, you know, they passed their final test with you know, pretty good effectiveness, I would say.
Yeah, I think so too. I only saw about 5 minutes of that game, and of course, I caught Gus Johnson saying "Maserati," and I watched like 2 minutes of it. So like that was kind of funny. I caught the end of the first half where Ohio State ended up missing that field goal. And, you know, you saw the Michigan kicker nail a 50-yard field goal. And, you know, that played a big part of it, too, because on that last drive of the game, if you know you just need a field goal, you're going to be more conservative with your play calling and get that field goal. And maybe they had an overtime. So, you know, definitely a bit of a surprise. You know, surprise. I thought Ohio State was going to pull it out in that one. I think this, if this game was in Columbus, I think you see Ohio State pull off the upset, or I guess they were number two, so it just win the game at that point. But yeah, credit to Michigan that they just are able to run the football on anybody. It doesn't matter if it's a defense to the caliber of Ohio State. JJ McCarthy made a couple really tough throws today, and you know, they were disciplined when it mattered most. So really good performance. You know, they're going to sleepwalk through Iowa and still win. And, you know, then they're going to be off to the college football playoff and representing the Big Ten. So they're looking good.
For us.
Yay for us. But, oh, I saw this funny sign. They were like ranking days of the week. And then it was like the worst day of the week was like Monday.
Ryan Day.
And then below that, Ryan Day below Monday.
Nice. That's so awesome.
That was a clever sign. I saw that. I don't know if I sent you a picture of that or not.
No, that is good though. That's some high level trolling. I'll tell you what, man, I'd be very curious to see what kind of reception or like what the feeling and tenor is of Ohio State fans over these next like 24 to 48 hours, because I mean, we saw it after last season that people, you know, they were pissed. Like they were really, really mad to lose to Michigan 2 years in a row. So now to lose to them 3 years in a row against an interim head coach and stuff like that, like that ain't good. You know, now, and I've seen some semblance of rumors about Texas A&M going after Ryan Day. So wonder like how, I guess, you know, strongly would they feel about Coach Day going to Texas A&M, considering that there's a faction of their fan base that want him gone for losing the game. You know, I feel like it's weird because I feel like we're talking about ourselves in a way, like kind of a mirror reflection, if you will, because he can't win quote unquote the game and stuff like that. Kind of like James Franklin can't, you know, over these past 10 years and stuff. So I don't know, man, it'll be an interesting, I guess, kind of internal debate of a fan base. Well,
it's just hysterical to me seeing those Ryan Day comments saying that they should, you know, go their separate ways. I just think it's comical, man. Like,
this is a guy who's literally in a college football playoff final, like in the championship. And yeah. Made it in the playoff multiple times.
Yeah. And then you have last year where, you know, they're a kick away from going to the national championship and probably just curb stomping TCU.
They would have, but, yeah.
Yeah, and like, I mean, they would need a lot of things to go their way, but like, they're not 100% out of the college football playoff. I would say things are not in their favor.
Yes.
There's still a lot of upsets that can occur. Like, we saw Louisville lost today. They really could have used some help from Alabama, but Auburn, just for whatever reason, they decided not to catch a punt. And then their defense, like, got in great position. They're like fourth and 30. Yep. And Milroe just threw a dime in the corner of the end zone. And yeah, the wide receiver pushed off a little bit, but at that point in the game, like, the officials are going to let the players decide who wins unless it's extremely egregious. So I couldn't believe that catch when I saw it. I figured he must have been outside of the end zone, but that would have been good in the NFL. Both feet were in, and just crazy. They had eight guys covering that end zone, and Alabama's just finds a way. And I'm thinking in the back of my head, like, would Alabama fans be like, oh, fire Nick Saban after losing to Texas at home and then losing on the road to 6-5 Auburn? Like, because we're getting all PO'd at Franklin for losing to these top five teams overall. And do you think Alabama would start to go there with if they lost to Auburn and a, you know, barely above 500 football team that just lost to New Mexico State the week before?
I think, you know, they'd be mad. But I think a lot of fans would be hard pressed to say that, like, we got to get rid of Saban now, because they're still recruiting at like an insanely high level. They're like number one, two, or three, like, in the recruiting rankings. You probably get like a couple of crazies out there, but I mean, like, Nick Saban is, I mean, he's just reached a level of job security that I don't think will ever be reached again in college football. Like, when you've won as many championships as that guy has, like, you can withstand a lot. And a 10-win regular season, you know, albeit losing to like your biggest rival when they're down so bad as far as their record is concerned, I don't think would be the straw that breaks the camel's back, but who knows?
Yeah, you never know. But there was just wild things. Louisville lost to Kentucky, which I think could help Penn State get one a little closer to a college football playoff spot, because they're always weird with who they pick and stuff. Like, they're like, oh, it needs to be like a group of five team and then like an ACC team here. And really, the only game that the Big Ten gets to go to typically is the Rose Bowl. And that's part of the college football playoff this year. So you will not see Penn State in the Rose Bowl, which is unfortunate. So, but yeah, some other games we had that had college football playoff implications. You had Washington just barely hanging on against Washington State. It was a tie game, 21-21, and they decided to go for it fourth and one in their own territory. Big end around run to their wide receiver. They end up getting the game winning field goal right at the end of the game. So that was crazy. Oklahoma State had a big comeback today. They were down 24-7 at halftime. They came back and they ended up winning 40-34 in double overtime over BYU. That was a wild game. Louisville, like we talked about, stumbled to Kentucky 38-31. LSU, Jaden Daniels is good, man.
Heisman.
He could be the Heisman. They ended up winning 42-30. I think that Pac-12 championship game is going to be really fun to watch. Oregon curb stomped Oregon State 31-7. And sidebar here, what are your thoughts on Oregon State's head coach becoming the new Michigan State football coach?
Yeah, good for them. Good coach on the upswing of things. I think Michigan State did a good job in snatching him up when they did, just because, I mean, like, it's tough to find guys like that, like, get them before like other programs do, you know, because we're probably going to start seeing, you know, more updates about head coaches like being let go since we've reached, you know, the end of the regular season and stuff like that. So for them to kind of move so quickly and kind of secure their next guy, like, yeah, sure, good for them.
Yeah. Texas, Mizzou, they steamrolled their opponents. Oklahoma, they beat TCU in a shootout. Look at this score, 69-45.
Nice.
That's wild. That's wild. Yeah, so they're very close. It's going to be Texas and Oklahoma State in the Big 12 championship, because Oklahoma State did have the head-to-head win over Oklahoma. And then you had Iowa just doing Iowa things. They beat Northwestern at their place 13-10 to also be 10-2. Oh my God.
They're going to play for the Big 10 championship. This conference is such a joke.
It is. I just wish we could have like I don't know, like the Pac teams, and then just like R4 and be like the like a power eight or something, just like us, Michigan, Ohio State, like Maryland, Michigan State, and then like the Pac-12 teams that are coming over, like just make that the conference now. Like we don't need all these other schools.
Seriously, my dad and I, we were talking about this on Thursday, and we were saying about, you know, with the dissolution of the divisions and stuff, I mean, this is such a nice thing for the East, because, you know, we're not all kind of cannibalizing each other year after year. And I mean, granted, like we're still going to be playing each other on, you know, kind of an off basis and stuff like that. But this is going to be like a freaking shell shock for all the teams in the West, because, you know, not, they don't have like the one-off like crossover from Michigan or something like that. Now they're going to have all these like offenses coming in. I mean, granted, like Big Ten West defenses are still like half decent and stuff like that, but they're not getting away from, you know, the teams in the East anymore. Now they're, you know, they're surrounded on both sides.
Yep, absolutely. And I think it's gonna, I would say my favorite format is the old Big 12, where the Big 12 had 10 teams and everybody played everybody. That's still my favorite format. You play everyone every year. Rivalries are real. So that's my favorite format in terms of, you know, a league and determining a winner. That's my favorite. So, yeah. And then you had the Egg Bowl. You had Ole Miss winning 17-7 over Mississippi State. That's another squad who's probably going to be in contention versus Penn State in terms of pole position at the end of the year, depending on how bowl games go. But yeah, so a lot of good football games going on. Some other teams that are on upset alert with Kansas State, they're up 20-14 on Iowa State. NC State's rolling against North Carolina 26-7. Georgia Tech was actually pretty close with Georgia for a while, but Georgia's starting to pull away. They're up 24-13 towards the end of the third quarter. Clemson is up 16-7 on South Carolina towards the end of the third quarter. And then this one, this is the one we need to really pay attention to. And maybe this is one of those games that helps Ohio State out a little bit. Florida State is up 17-15 at Florida with the ball 7 minutes in the game. Do you think Florida State is able to win in the swamp without star Jordan Travis?
Yeah, Florida's going to find a way to choke that game away.
Yeah, Florida, although Florida almost upset Mizzou at their place, number nine.
But they choked. That's my point.
Yeah, this seems to be a team that does find a way to lose. Like, they had a guy get ejected for like spitting in the first half. And then that game, like, nice. Florida State had 0 points at that point in the game, and it gave them 15 yards, and they were able to get a touchdown right before halftime. And then you had Florida, who actually had a couple explosive runs, get to the end of the field, and then their kicker got iced and then missed the field goal. So, you know, Florida just lost all momentum. And yeah, I do think that they'll probably end up losing. But if Florida is able to pull off the upset, I do think that makes things a lot more interesting in terms of college football playoff implications and
potentially sure does.
Helping Penn State in terms of New Year's Six Bowl eligibility.
Yeah. Yeah, because now the magic question is, you know, do you put in a non-conference winning Big Ten team over some of these conference champion teams? You know, assuming that like some of these teams are going to finish with one loss. So that's the magic question again this year. Seems to be a yearly occurrence.
Yeah, so I'll get your thoughts now. Who are the four teams you think will make the college football playoff?
Oh, man. I'll go with Georgia and Michigan to start. I think they are, like, they're going to win their respective conference championship games. I think they're the two best teams in the country. I'll go next with Oregon. I like Oregon in this rematch against Washington. I think they're the hotter team right now. I think they're the more complete team right now. And I think getting away from Washington is going to help them. So neutral field, I think, favors Oregon more in this scenario. So that's three. And then for the four, man, this is tough because I think at the four, you have this like weird grouping of Texas, Washington, and Ohio State. And I'm not really going to include Alabama in this scenario, because I think in the scenario that I just laid out, Georgia will beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. So I think a two loss Alabama's out. So you have Texas, who I think they're gonna win the conference championship rather easily, because I mean, Oklahoma State got dog walked by UCF a couple weeks ago, I think it was. So I mean, as long as they do everything right, Texas should win that game. So you have a one loss conference champion, Texas, who has a win over Alabama, and they lost, you know, a last second game against Oklahoma, who is no slouch. And then you have a non-conference champion, Washington, who also only has one loss to conference champion Oregon. So I guess my fourth team in that scenario, I think I gotta go almost like 2014 college football playoff, like, you know, you put the conference champion in who's like the hottest team. I think I gotta go with Texas.
So that's funny. I think I had the same teams as you for who okay. I think is going to make it. I do think Georgia will probably make it. Michigan. Uh-huh. I do think Oregon's a better team than Washington. So I think that Oregon's going to upset the Huskies in the Pac-12 championship. And then, yeah, I don't see Texas losing to Oklahoma State in the college football playoff. Like, they struggled with BYU today, and they've had a couple questionable losses. So, you know, give me Texas in there. But, all right, I want to give you, like, the nightmare scenario here. Okay. So, like, all right, here's our nightmare scenario. Let's say Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC championship. Both those teams are 12-1.
Okay.
And then let's say Michigan loses to Iowa. So they're 12-1. And then you got Ohio State at 11-1. And then Oregon beats Washington. They're both 12-1. Let's say Florida State, let's say they win and then lose to Louisville in the ACC championship. They're 12-1. And Texas wins. They're 12-1. You could have eight teams with like one loss.
Holy cow. Yeah.
And it's like, so how do you
for pick a four team field from that?
Yeah. Like, typically, like, it's one of those things where it's just like, everything works out and a two loss team doesn't make it. But in this kind of chaos theory, like, that could happen. Like, I don't think Michigan's going to lose. So, like, I think they'll make it no matter what. Like, they're not going to lose to Iowa. But, you know, I don't think Alabama beating Georgia is outside of the realm of possibility. I know they didn't play great against Auburn, but they've, you know, won all their other games. So I think they're, you know, on a neutral field, I think they have a shot to take down Georgia. Oregon, I think, will take down Washington. They'll both be 12-1. Texas, I think, will win. And then Florida State, you know, we'll see if they can hold on against Florida here. But they can very much lose to Louisville without their starting quarterback. You know, Louisville could bounce back after a tough loss to Kentucky, you know, rival. So, yeah. This is going to be a nightmare. I would not want to have to be that guy who has to say, yep, you two with your like 12-1 record, you're not going.
Yeah.
I would not want that job.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want it.
Yeah. Because I mean, we forgot like in our original scenario to include Florida State in there as well, because they would technically be, you know, if they win today and then they win the conference championship, that's 13-0. You can't keep a 13-0 ACC. Yeah. Like, you can't keep a 13-0 ACC champion out of the college football playoff, like, regardless of who it is and who their quarterback is and stuff, at least in my opinion. Like, you know, if you're going to put the teams in based on their body of work and all that stuff, like, you got to put them in. So as long as they win out, I guess I'm going to change my original answer to probably like 60-40, put them in over Texas. But yeah, so if they lose, and you have all these like one loss teams still there, I think you go Michigan. Michigan is in no matter what. Like, they, you know,
they have the easiest path.
Yeah. And I think, though, you know, they're like, they're not going to lose their spot to Iowa because Iowa's a two loss team. They just,
yeah, like, they won't make it no matter what.
You can't get dog walked by us and then make the college football playoff, like, by winning a fluke, you know, in the Big Ten championship game. That's just my opinion. But so then you have all these other teams. I think you still go Oregon in that case, because their 12-1 would include a, you know, Pac-12 championship. I think you also have Texas in that scenario as well. So we have three out of the original four. So then the question is the representative from the SEC, because if Florida State loses a game either today or in the championship game, they're done. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
So then it comes down to the SEC. And so who deserves it more between Georgia, who went the full season undefeated, or Alabama, who struggled against USF, lost a football game in the regular season, and then has all this stuff happen to them? So this is like the K-State TCU game from last year, but like cranked up to 11, you know?
Yeah, this is really wild. Like, I really truly believe that Washington is going to lose and they're going to get left out. And it sucks, mm-hmm. because the one team they lost to, they beat earlier in the season. Like,
yep.
Like, in this, the same would happen if Oregon got knocked out. It's like their one blemish they also beat. So it's just a weird scenario. Like I think the Pac-12 has the best chance to get two teams in, you could argue.
I would agree. Yeah.
And then the SEC, like, do you can you actually, I want to see, what are your thoughts? If, let's say, Georgia loses to Bama, they're gonna, mm-hmm. definitely going to take Bama for sure. And then you got Michigan, like Oregon or Washington, whoever wins the Pac-12. And then let's say you've undefeated Florida State. Do you think Georgia might miss out on the college football playoff if they lose to Bama in the SEC championship?
I don't think so. I think we might see a scenario where,
going from number one to not in the playoff.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that. And the reason why is because historically, the committee loves their SEC. They love Georgia and they love Bama. They love to put those two teams in the final field, as we've seen over the course of, you know, how many of these playoffs over the last handful of years. So in that scenario, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that SEC, not the Pac-12, gets the two teams in.
Okay. I don't think it's far-fetched if Georgia loses that they don't make it. They go from number one to not even in, because, you know, Michigan's going to go undefeated. Florida State, if they go undefeated, that's two spots. If Washington's undefeated, they're in. Mm-hmm. And if Oregon upsets Washington, I think they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because they have a conference championship, and they say they value that. And then Texas's loss is to Kansas, but if they win the championship, then that doesn't make them look as bad. So I'm just trying to think, like, how you, like, can argue an 11-1 not conference champion over an 11-1 conference champion to make the college football playoff. You know what,
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, it's true. But what kind of value does a 12-1 non-conference champ, or yeah, like, non-conference winner have in, like, in Georgia?
Yeah, I don't know. It's so
here, you're just arguing. Sorry, I was just saying, like, here's the scenario, I guess, then. So you have a 12-1 Georgia versus a 12-1 Washington. Neither one of them won their conference, but they went the full regular season undefeated. Who do you take in that scenario?
Well, I don't think either of them make it if that's the scenario.
Okay.
Because I think Bama and Oregon, Michigan, and then if Florida State wins, they could all go in. And then you could have Texas, if they win the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue them over them, because, like, Texas has wins over Alabama, and Alabama's the SEC champion who beat Georgia.
Yep.
So it's, you know, obviously they don't do the transitive property stuff, but didn't Quinn Ewers get hurt in that Kansas game too?
I don't know. I did see that.
I know he was injured.
Got some action.
Yeah, like I know he was injured, had some injuries at some point throughout the season. Quinn Ewers did.
Yes, he was.
So I think that contributed to their loss against Kansas. So is that another factor too?
They lost to Kansas?
Yeah, I think that's Texas's one loss, Kansas, right?
No, it was to Oklahoma.
Oh yeah, they lost to, that is right. Oklahoma was the one who lost to Kansas, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I got those two mixed up. So they lost to Oklahoma in like a crazy shootout where Oklahoma had the ball last at the end of the game.
Correct.
So, well, actually, that would have been even crazier if Oklahoma State lost and then Texas beat Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship to kind of like get some revenge for their one blemish on their record. Man, that would just be like, I know
something
you can't
romantic
just be like,
about it.
I know you can't just be like, F it, let's just start the college football playoff early and expand it to 8 teams. And like, I don't think anyone would complain about more football games. And no. I think it would just be right to give, like, in terms of competitive fairness, like to give all those, because you have 8 teams that deserve to go. I think it's a shame for any of the 8 of them to be left out, really. You know, obviously things can unfold in a certain way where you don't think they're, you know, able to qualify, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Glad that's not my job.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure that the committee is just hoping that the script plays out like it's supposed to. And teams like Georgia win, Michigan win, and like either Florida State or Texas wins, because then like, you know, their job becomes a heck of a lot easier.
I think they're going to be rooting for like Texas and Florida State to lose to make it easier, honestly.
Mm.
Yeah, maybe. I think the only scenario in which it works out for the college football playoff committee is Michigan wins out, Georgia wins out, Washington wins out, and then Florida State or Texas, one of the two loses. Mm. I think that's the best scenario for them.
Oh, I see. Okay. So then who would you have as your fourth in that case? Would you put in Oregon?
So no, because they have 2 losses to Washington.
Right.
So that's the second loss. So I think it would probably be, you know, let's say Texas wins, they go in. And if Florida State's undefeated, they're obviously that team that goes in. And you have four undefeated teams, essentially.
Yeah.
I think they're just hoping for 4 undefeated teams. That way they can just justify it that way. But
yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I'm in true belief that Oregon is going to just mop up on Washington.
Wow.
Like ever since that game, like Oregon's just been like,
they've been on a tear.
They've been on a tear, just destroying teams. And like Washington's had to win some of these games, like some really close games. So I think it's going to be interesting. It's certainly not going to be boring, that's for sure. So Florida State, they're up 24. They scored a touchdown, so they're up 24-15. So that's going to come down to Louisville, and if Louisville can bounce back and upset them. So
we'll see. Yep.
Yeah, chaos theory. Like, somebody is going to get left out, and there's going to be uproar. Like, it's going to be wild.
Somebody's going to be pissed. Yep.
Somebody's like... It's almost like Penn State getting left out when they won the Big Ten championship. Like,
yeah. And destroyed. Yeah. The idea and the precedent that you needed to win your conference to get into the playoff, because Ohio State has gotten into the playoff without being the Big Ten champion multiple times. So yeah, that was cool. That was fun, but whatever.
This is what it is. Anything else you want to talk about? We had some other Penn State Athletics. Do you want to talk about that and then wrap it up?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, so basketball. The women's team had a really good time in the Bahamas. And I don't just mean, hey, they went out and like got a nice tan or something. They played some really good basketball. They beat Oklahoma State on Monday. And then on Wednesday, they came 1 point shy of knocking down number 8 USC. So women's basketball team, they're looking legit this year. They're playing They're playing at 1 o'clock on Sunday versus Providence at home. They're also playing Radford on Wednesday. So, you know, you can check out the women's basketball team. Men's team had a couple tough losses against Texas A&M and Butler. They lost those squads by 12 and 10 points respectively. They were really competitive for long periods of time within the game. They were only down like 2 or 3 points. But at the end of the day, the other teams were just able to pull away towards the end of the game and really closed out. Team struggled a little bit in terms of physicality with rebounding and knocking down 3-point shots. Shooting percentage is lower than last year, but I am really liking this offense. I felt like last year, sometimes the Micah Shrewsbury offense, everyone was kind of standing still and Jalen Pickett was kind of doing his thing. One thing I really do like from the Mike Rhodes offense is that everybody seems to be moving. There never seems to be guys just standing around. Like, it's more, you know, players not hitting the open shots when they're there. And, you know, there was a couple turnovers in crunch time where, hey, they got down by 6-8 points. And then, you know, that time starts going faster in your head and you're more prone to make mistakes. They definitely did that towards the end of the game. But yeah, we might go more in depth to that. They have their third game versus Coach Rhodes' former squad, VCU. They're playing Sunday, 10:30. So Coach Rhodes is going to be really familiar with them. Hopefully we can win our third game in the ESPN Orlando Classic. So yeah, that's what's happened on the hardwood. Men's and women's ice hockey both got sweeps this weekend. They really took the wood to Lindenwood. They beat them up 9-3 and 7-1. Women's team had 2 wins over Dartmouth this weekend, so that was really good to see. Women's volleyball, number 14 in the country, they've just finished their season on a tear. They beat Maryland and Ohio State 3-0, so they won their last 6 matches heading into tournament time, and they might even be hosting some games Thursday and Friday for the first 2 rounds of the NCAA tournament, so that's exciting. Also, got some wrestling action. We had the Rec Hall. It was in Rec Hall, but it was the NWCA All-Star Classic. And it was really cool because they take like the best guys at each weight class in the entire country and they just kind of battle it out. So I had a really good time because not only were there 6 Penn State guys wrestling, I also had one of my Lock Haven guys wrestling at 125. He lost a really close one to that wrestler from Purdue who upset Spencer Lee. So that was a bummer. Mm-hmm. He ended up being down 3-2, but he had like a takedown and most people thought it was in the takedown from the crowd. So you heard the cheering, but the officials didn't credit them the takedown. I guess like the guy was holding a leg or something. So like they just said no takedown and the period ran out. So that was a bummer. He was like very close to winning that one. He ended up losing like 10-2 because he just kind of went for a takedown and it didn't work out like towards the end of the period. But it was kind of like desperate, like he had 20 seconds and was trying to win the match. So,
yep.
And then in terms of Penn State guys, 5 out of our 6 guys just crushed it. Greg in the heavyweight class, he just destroyed his guy. He only didn't even make it through the second period. It was just by decision that quickly. Carter Starucci and Aaron Brooks looked awesome. You had Shane Van Ness get a big win. Bernie was ahead of his guy for most of the match. And then he just got him. He got a point for stalling. So he was up 4-3 and then got penalized for stalling. And then the guy got a takedown on him with 7 seconds left in the third period. So he was just kind of, you know, you're not going to come back in 7 seconds in wrestling. You're not going to, you know, escape and get a takedown. So that was tough. But I did want to make you aware because this is apparently a big thing. Takedowns are now 3 points in wrestling for the NCAA.
What? Really?
Yes. It was really funny because everyone in the crowd was screaming like two.
Yeah, they screamed two.
Everybody screams two. And they were still screaming two, but like the rule change is like 3. So like they would get 3 points for all the takedowns.
Interesting.
Huh. Yeah. So I think they did that so that there were less ties. I think they're trying to have wrestlers go into overtime less, but I think that was like the reasoning for it. you know me. I'm the number one wrestling fan on the podcast.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's interesting.
But yeah, I went with my friend, had a great time. We had like, we were in like the wrestling club seats. Like, I felt like very like VIP. Like, I was just like casually hanging out with like Max Dean and Bo Nickel and Roman Bravo Young. He's getting ready to wrestle for the Olympic team for Mexico. Mm-hmm. And then I was talking to Max. He's doing, I think, like senior nationals for wrestling in like a month or so. So it's cool to see him continuing his career post-collegially. And, you know, Bo, I think, is going to try to get a fight in April for UFC. So that's pretty cool seeing all those guys and just chilling and met a bunch of the, you know, the wrestlers post-match. So definitely really cool to, you know, meet the athletes. They're all a good group of guys. So that was definitely one of the highlights of my week pre-Thanksgiving for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you'd mentioned that you'd met Aaron and Carter Cerracci and stuff. You know, I mean, it's crazy that you met like guys who are probably going to be wrestling for the United States in the Olympics. Like, that's how good these guys are. So that's just, you know, something very casual, but also very cool.
Very cool. Oh, also something I learned that I found hilarious. So you know how in sports, there's like the challenge flag for like football.
Are you going to mention the challenge brick?
Yes, dude, there's a dude that I didn't know this, man. Like wrestling, they could easily just throw a flag, but like they just like, no, we're going to throw a giant big like brick like on the floor. Like, I saw the officials. Well, when the first challenge brick was thrown, I didn't really see where it was coming from. So I just saw like the official pick it up and take it to like the scorer's table. And I'm like, somebody throw that from like the stands or something? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I know. It's a bit jarring. I think, you know, if I had to attach logic to it, I think it's just because sometimes the ref is like so like low down to the ground and is like looking at like the angle of a wrestler's back or looking at like the hand placement of the guy who's on top and stuff like that. So they need something that is like a little more like, you know, conspicuous or, you know, just kind of more obvious than a flag. So they need something that like, if they need to, they could actually throw and hit the guy. And it's not, you know, going to harm him in any way, but it's certainly going to get his attention. That's my theory. That's my theory.
Well, that makes more sense. It's probably going to make like a loud noise too when it hits the mat as
also
well.
Also that, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was pretty fun. Yeah, so I think that's all the sports. I feel like I'm missing one, but I always feel like that. So I'm just going to digress and keep on moving.
We should probably mention women's soccer. They dropped a heartbreaker to Clemson today in the NCAA tournament.
That's who I was missing. They lost 2-1 against Clemson. That heartbreaker, but really good season for the Lady Lions. Yeah.
Yep.
Elite Eight. Yeah. Really good run. So happy to see that. Yeah. Oh, in Iowa, I learned, but Bo Nickel's dad told me that Iowa is the only women's D1 wrestling program. And he was telling me that most of them are like NAIA schools because they have like four women's matches before that too that I got to see. So so Bo Nickel's dad was just kind of explaining stuff to me, so I had good company at the match.
Yeah, I mean, you heard it like basically straight from the horse's mouth. There's no better place to get that kind of information.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, he can't be wrong. Like, it's he knows this stuff.
This is
honestly
life.
Like, yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I'm obviously a basketball guy first and foremost. So when everyone tells me something about wrestling, I'm like, yep. All right. Yep. That makes sense. But yeah, really fun time. You know that the wrestling matches in Rec Hall are awesome. So hoping to make it to more in the future. They're actually wrestling against Lehigh on Sunday as well. So add that to the list. And basketball is going to be home for another matchup on Saturday as well versus Bucknell. That's a noon game. And ice hockey, we got the women's ice hockey team. They're going to have Robert Morris coming to town Friday and Saturday. They play at 2 p.m. and 1 p.m. And then the men's ice hockey team, they're going to be playing Minnesota in Big Ten play 7 p.m. Friday night and 6 p.m. on Saturday. So still a lot of Penn State sports going on. And Next week, it's going to be slowing down a little bit, but this week, you know, still tons of stuff going on.
Awesome.
Any final thoughts before we put a bow on this one?
No, just circle back to our original talking point. It was awesome to see Penn State get this win to finish out the season strong. We shouldn't take 10 win seasons for granted. Yeah, we should enjoy this one, go into the bowl season with these good vibes, and just continue keeping the faith that Franklin and crew are going to capitalize on this, have a good showing at whatever bowl game that they appear in and against whoever they end up playing against. You know, we might actually have ourselves another pod here in the next couple of days, because Franklin did make this mention that he's going to be speaking to offensive coordinator candidates via Zoom this weekend. So we might be on the horizon, you know, an announcement of a new offensive coordinator. So we might want to, you know, hop on and do a quick pod just to discuss that and give our initial reaction and thoughts. But until then, it was, you know, it's been an awesome season so far. You know, definitely some downs that we don't want to dwell too much on, but for the most part, this has been a pretty good one.
Yep. At 10-2, a lot of programs would kill to be where we are and ranked at top 10 in the country. So, you know, it is what it is, you know, but you know, we'll try to keep on moving forward and keep on keeping on. So,
that's right.
Thank you guys for listening as always. If you want to help us out, please tell your friends. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We also have a merch store. So if you want to check out the store, go to shop.nittanyblues.com. You can find tons of apparel there. We got the pink and black. We got the Lawn Boys. If you're into basketball, we got Booty Ball in celebration of Jalen Pickett's season. So make sure you check out the store. And thank you guys for listening. As always, we want to remind you that we are
the Nittany Blues Podcast. We'll see you next time.